This is a free download from the BBC. For more information, go to bbc.co.uk/podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for downloading my podcast. Yay! And also thanks in advance for leaving nice comments on the iTunes page. You haven't? Then you should, like Desmond, who writes 5 stars, no less, merging his witty humour, clever thinking and intelligent debate. Ian Lee has created a new twist on the tried and tested formula, which I'm not overly keen on. What do you mean we're not overly keen on? It means he's keen on it now. What he means is, he's given it 5 stars. Cut that bit. 5 stars from Desmond. And he left some nice words as well. So that's great. You can do the same. Thanks very much.
Across Beds, hearts and bucks.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
It's red happened to you.
Good song, isn't it? I didn't write it. I wish I had have done. That's the new single by Chaz and indeed Dave. By the way, at the end of this podcast, you'll have that song in your head until you die. I set our reporter, Justin Dealey, a Chaz and Dave challenge after I'd moaned to him about cold coffee. Justin Dealey!
Good morning, boss.
Well done, sir. Thank you. And can I just say a big round of applause to Justin for going above and beyond this morning. He brought us all in coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I can't. I can't.
No, go on.
Well...
Go on.
No, I can't.
Go on.
No.
Come on.
It seems rude.
No, come on.
It was cold.
What would you expect? It was a 10-minute journey.
What I expect is... Well, I expect warm coffee, Justin. That's not asking too much, is it?
I said to you, here's the coffee, OK? It's got your name on it. Go and put it in the mic if you need to warm it up. But you didn't.
No, because I shouldn't have to do that.
Oh, for goodness sake.
The two things that are flagged up here...
Yeah.
You should have got it from a nearer vendor.
But that vendor had shut recently.
I know, but it's reopening soon.
Yeah, soon, yes.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go... You're talking about a petrol station. Sorry, we should have this conversation off air, but you're here. When the petrol stations are shut, can you still ask them to make you a cough?
Yeah, you can. Of course you can.
Really?
I think so, yeah, because, you know, some petrol stations, every now and again, they run out of fuel. But, of course, in the store, they still sell things like coffee, cigarettes and confectionery. So, yes.
How does he get the coffee through the slot?
I don't know. This morning, I had to say, I need 5 coffees. The door was locked. I said, I need to come in. This is going to be quicker for all concerned if you just let me in the door. And he did.
This is going to be quicker for all concerned. Oh, you've made me chuckle. Listen, we've been playing this song this week.
Yeah.
I don't new Chaz and Dave record, When Two Worlds Collide. I love it, you love it.
That's brilliant.
Here we go. I think it's a cracking song.
Yeah, so do I.
We've sort of been told off by management for playing it perhaps a little bit too much.
When two worlds collide.
Kelly Betts is singing along with it. Justin, can you do me a favour? I want to win management round. Can you take a copy of this song out this morning? And I don't know, get like a ghetto blaster or something.
Yes.
And play it to the people of Beds, Hearts and Bucks and get their opinion on it.
You are in luck. I tell you why, because this morning I have my Bush ghetto blaster with me.
Have you got your Bush out?
Yes, I've got my Bush out. It's here with me today. I'll be taking the new Chaz and Dave single onto the streets of Bedfordshire to get people's reaction. Even if they don't like it, I'll make them say they love it. Don't worry, it's
fantastic.
All under control.
Make it good, and we're going to get Chaz on later on, hopefully. So
yeah, fingers crossed.
We'll have a word with him.
And the weather, dry with sunny spells and a top temperature of 18 degrees Celsius, that's 64 degrees Fahrenheit. Get the latest news and sport, along with some heavy breathing, at bbc.co.uk/three counties.
So, Catherine.
Yeah.
I have to drive down the motorway one, M1 as I like to call it, to get to my house.
Yes.
Where I live. I was wondering if I could kip at yours tonight.
Well, I would say yes, but my mother-in-law's on the camp bed.
Well, you could sleep on the floor.
Oh, thanks.
Or she can. One of you can sleep on the floor. I mean, I'm not fussed which.
Right.
I'll top and tail with your mother-in-law.
She'd love that.
How old is she?
She's older than you. But
Perfect.
She's quite small. Perfect.
191 drivers aged 100 or older on the road. Oh, my word, this is terrifying.
Record figures, of course.
The number of people aged over 70 who hold driving licences has exceeded 4 million.
Well, we are getting older as a nation, that's probably why.
But
these are record figures, Ian.
The oldest licence holder, get this, a woman who is 107 years old.
Wow.
Now, I've said this before, and I'll say this again. You're over 80, you shouldn't be allowed to drive, period, fact, end of. That's, I think, pretty obvious. There would be hard for anybody to disagree with that. If you're over 80, you stop driving.
But why would that be the case? Because everyone's different, though, aren't they, surely?
No, they're not. And if you are over 65, you have to do a driving test every year. We have to keep the roads safe, Justin. And some of these older drivers, no disrespect, some of these older drivers just aren't up to it. Roads have changed since the First World War. There are more vehicles. We don't have that man waving the red flag in front of the car anymore.
Obviously, the roads have changed, but I don't think you can be as stereotypical to say that every single person over the age of 80 should not be on the roads, because you could have somebody who's 85 years old and they've got the reactions of somebody who's 50 years old. We can't put everybody into the same boat, can we?
But if it yes, we can, Justin. If it saves a life, then I'm afraid we do have to. They've got free bus passes, and I know we have a lot of older listeners, and I love all of them apart from Dennis, but no disrespect, but they should not be allowed to drive. It seems obvious to me, and I think people would be hard pushed to disagree with that if they really look into their hearts and souls.
Well, I have to say, this morning, I've been out and about talking to motorists. Most people agree with you. I've been getting people's opinions about older drivers, and here's what people have had to say.
Most of them are an absolute nightmare. Drive slow. Some of them don't indicate. Just a nightmare.
So dangerous to the roads.
Dangerous to the roads, yeah.
Personally, I think they're worse than, or more dangerous than younger drivers, to be honest.
Now, when you say they're dangerous, what are they doing?
Less aware, to be honest. And I know people like say the younger drivers are quite bad, but I think older drivers are quite bad too.
I just don't think their reactions are the same anymore. It's totally different. It's they certainly slow down, don't they? You know, and when you come to junctions and things like that, they haven't got the confidence anymore, I don't think.
I mean, just lastly, this report out today says that there are drivers out there above the age of 100. Do you think there should be a cut-off point that says once you hit a certain age, you shouldn't be driving on our roads?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, definitely.
And what do you think that age should be? What's a fair age?
Well, if they're looking at 70, if they're retesting at 70, so that's got to be somewhere around that mark. They should be tested thoroughly, not just out on the roads, for their reactions and everything. Can't be the same anymore, can it, when you're 70?
Yeah, I think we have got, as we're getting older and we're living longer, yeah, we obviously have got older drivers on the road, yeah.
And what's your opinion about some of these older drivers that you've experienced? Are they a danger to our roads?
I think some could be, but I think a lot of people that are older, I know one gentleman in his 90s, and he only really drives to the local shops. Just to get his paper and different things. So I think some of them are sensible, but some of them don't realise that it's going to take them longer to respond to something. So
that lady at the end was excellent. She raised 2 points. Some of them don't realise it will take them longer to respond. So the two things there, it will take them longer to respond. That's just basic science. And when you're driving a car, you need to have your responses, boom, just like that. And some of them don't realise that their faculties have deteriorated. We don't know that our bodies are getting slower and older and we can't see quite as well.
Well, it's not just older people, but, of course, a lot of younger people think they're great drivers too. But if they were to be put on a retest, the test would probably tell them something completely different. This report today from the RAC Foundation says that once people reach the age of 70, they must declare whether or not they are fit to drive every 3 years. Now, this is without having to take a driving or medical examination.
Well, that's just crazy.
That's not right for me. Now, if somebody is above the age of 70, and of course that they can prove they're fit to be on the roads, fantastic. But, you know, somebody saying, are you fit to be on the roads? Well, of course you're going to say yes. You're not going to say no, are you?
I think it should be. I'm going to change what I said slightly, because I hope I didn't offend anybody. I said if you're 80 or over, you should be banned from driving. I'm going to correct that. If you're 75 or over, you should be banned from driving. Because you don't need it. You have free travel. There's not not a lot for you to do. You might, you know, you don't need to put other people's lives at risk.
But where's the independence, though? If you're 75 years old, yeah. who wants to go and wait for a bus in the freezing cold, hoping it might get there on the time? You know, people like to have the independence, having their own vehicles. If you're fit to be on the roads, if you're 75, 85, 95, as long as you're fit to be on the roads, for me, there's no problem.
Justin, thank you very much indeed. 08459 455 555. We can wait a few minutes while you get to the phone, don't worry. Patrick's in Letchworth. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, sir.
It's speaking good sense this morning, aren't I?
Not really.
Sorry?
You're speaking like a gone bean, man.
I've got... like a what?
A gone bean.
I don't know what that means.
Well, looked up the dictionary and you might find it.
OK, gone bean. Well, I haven't got time at the moment.
I was 80 last Thursday.
Happy birthday to you.
I thoroughly enjoy my driving.
I hope you've handed your keys to a responsible young person.
That's me.
Sorry?
That's me.
You're gone bean, I'm afraid.
No. I have handed the keys to a responsible person by accepting them myself.
Patrick.
I've got a brand new car.
Oh.
I'm very proud of it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to continue driving and continue working until the man above tells me you've had enough.
But what if the man above tells you you've had enough while you're driving your car on the motorway?
Yeah.
And you have, you know, something unfortunate physical happens to you.
Like a Luton bang bang.
I'm not even going to ask.
Okay.
I'm not even going to ask. But supposing you have a heart attack while you're driving is what I'm getting at, and you cause a massive pile-up on the M1.
Yeah.
Well, that's not responsible, is it?
I don't go on the M1.
Good. Well, that's something. You're learning something. We're getting there.
No, I'm not learning. I have no need to go on the M1.
Okay.
My going on the M1 yes. ended when I left work.
Okay. But, Patrick, you've got to be honest. Your reactions, your eyesight, your hearing, they're not as developed as they were 60 years ago.
Your commentary and your broadcasting is not as good as it was 10 years ago.
Well, listen, there's no doubt about that. I was a different man 10 years ago in more ways than one, certainly more on the ball.
Yeah.
But you see what I'm saying, Patrick? You struggle to respond to that, and I'm sure you're a very sharp young man, but as we get older, it happens to all of us. It's not an admission of defeat or weakness. We all get a little bit slower.
Do you know what? I've had 3 accidents since 2006.
Oh, my goodness!
And no, hold on. None of them were my fault.
Yeah, they all say that.
No, my no claims bonus tells me that.
Okay.
The police have told me that, and the person who caused the accident has told me
was
that.
Was it an old person driving the other car?
No, he was quite a young fella.
The older driver situation continued. In fact, got a little bit feisty, didn't it, Kelly?
Mm.
Shut up. I was right, of course, as I often am. Here's proof.
Oh, Ian, stop picking on the pensioners.
On the pensioners, I'm just trying to keep the roads safe for my kids.
No, you're being very ageist. There are some people in their 30s that I wouldn't get in a car with.
Right.
And there's some people of 80 that I would. So you can't say everybody's the same because they really are not. Myself, I'm going to be working late into my 60s. I had a letter the other day from the pensions thing. But, you know... Yes, I think something needs doing.
Well, what needs doing then? What would you suggest?
Everybody, not just pensioners, I think everybody should have to have a test every 5 years and like a refresher.
I'll give you that.
And
I'll have that.
If you had that, then everybody would be in the same boat because you're being very ageist. And
the thing is, I'm not being ageist. I'm being practical. I'm being practical, and let me explain why. Because, I totally agree. Yes, let's all have a test every 5 years. But if you start doing that when you're older, the body deteriorates quicker. So within those 5 years, a significant number of things are more likely to happen to an older person than they are to a younger person.
But if everybody had a test, it would pick it up, wouldn't it?
Well, with a five-year gap, Lynn.
Year olds that are sharp as tacks. You know, that is so wrong, Ian. You're really, really
with
wrong.
With a five-year gap, though, Lynn, there is something more likely to happen to someone between the ages of 75 and 80, medically, than between the ages of 35 and 40. Because the body deteriorates quicker at that age. That's a fact.
3 years, then. So, you know, you can...
Well, how about...
But you're being so ageist because...
OK, you keep going back to that, but we're not...
But you are.
We're not taking the argument any further. Let's try, because you're almost onto something. Let's keep it 5 years until you get to the age of 65, then let's do it every year.
Well, that's fair enough.
Fine. And then when you get to 75, you stop driving. There we go. We're sorted.
But no, there are some 80-year-olds that are fantastic.
But there are some 80-year-olds that are awful and they don't recognise they're awful.
It would be checked out, wouldn't it? You know, if they all had to have a test every year, fine. But you can't say that. You can't say because they're a certain age, they're not as good as they were the year before. You can't say that.
And I'm not saying that.
Well, you are.
No, I'm not.
I'm saying they deteriorate quicker.
Well, that's a biological fact, Lynn. They do. That's biology. I mean, you can argue with science if you want, but that would seem churlish.
Pensioners are the only group of people that get treated like this. No other group of people get treated like that.
Well, no, because in reference to driving and the skills that are required in terms of hearing and seeing and reaction, of course they're going to be targeted because their reactions deteriorate.
If you had a yearly test, things like that would be picked up, so half the crazies that are on the road now wouldn't be on the road.
Are you talking about older crazies or...?
Anybody.
Oh, I agree. There are far too many crazies. I also think that we start driving too young in this country. I think you shouldn't be able to take a driving test until you're 22.
I quite agree with that, actually.
Shall we shake hands on that and walk away?
Yes, then.
Lynn,
okay.
Thank you very much. Ta-ta.
Have a nice day.
There you go, Lynn. Bye-bye. Andrew's in Bedford. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ian.
What do you think we should do about this problem?
Well, I think you're on totally the wrong track because, statistically, the worst drivers on the road are the ones that cause the most road deaths. Our drivers between 17 and 25. So, as you said earlier, should we raise your suggestion of 22 before someone could get a driving licence to 26?
Sure, I'll back that. I do think we learn to drive too young in this country. So, yeah, let's raise the age that you can start driving and let's lower the age that you have to stop driving.
Yeah, but also, about this, you said to that other gentleman before, what about if he was driving along the M1 and had a heart attack?
Yes.
Well, you can have a heart attack at any age.
But you're more likely to have it when you're older, though.
Not necessarily. Well, you ask the super fit people. I mean, you ask Fabrice Muamba.
Well, yes, but Fabrice...
person, he had a heart attack.
Yes, but he is an exception. Fabrice Muamba is an exception. I would suggest you're more likely to have a heart attack if you're older.
Yeah, possibly. But then again, the fact is that I see every day... drivers on the phone, and I've never ever seen an older person on the phone.
Oh, Andrew, really?
No, never ever. I've never seen anyone. I saw someone the other day. I've never seen anyone that looks more than about 30 perhaps those 40 on the phone, on a mobile phone.
Andrew.
Handheld.
Andrew.
Driving along, and that's supposed to be as dangerous as drink driving. And you can't tell me you've seen one either.
Yes, yes, I can, because I have.
It's very rare, though, isn't it? An older person doesn't have that much use for a mobile phone anyway.
Oh, now who's being ageist?
Well, they don't.
Of course they do. Old people use mobile phones.
Yeah, but they don't use them at the same time they're driving. I've never seen one, and I see every day, practically, if I'm out and about. And it's always people who are 40 or below, and it's often a lot younger than that. And that's as dangerous. I mean, that should be much more enforced. And coming back to what you were saying earlier, xenophobia and racism is a very thin line between the two of them, isn't there?
Well, no, they're too distinct.
Well, how would you describe xenophobia?
Well, xenophobia is a fear of something or someone foreign.
Yeah.
Racism is a hatred of something or someone foreign.
Yeah, but how do you distinguish?
You can't distinguish between fear and hatred.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Well, there were these recent Greek protests about the austerity. There was a lot of them. There was scenes that were shown on BBC News of the people holding up placards with Angela Merkel wearing a Nazi uniform. Now, is that xenophobia or is that racism?
Xenophobia.
So it's not racism?
No.
Why?
I don't think you can be racist against the Germans.
Why?
Because they're not a race.
Of course they are a race.
Well, no, they're not.
They are.
Well, no, they're not.
Of course they're a race.
They're not a race.
Well, they are.
They're not. They're the Germans.
Well, that's a race, isn't it?
Well, no, it isn't a race.
It's Germanic. It's the Germanic race.
Well, it's the Germanic people. It's not a Germanic race. Again, it's a fine line. But no, you can't be. And also, why is it racist depicting Angela Merkel in a Nazi uniform? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, surely they were racist, weren't they?
Who?
The Nazis.
The Nazis were racist, yes.
So it was a racist thing then. If you're depicting someone as someone that was one of the most racist people on the planet,
no,
you're making out that they're racist.
Well, you're making out
xenophobia.
No, well, you're saying, was it the Greeks being racist by having pictures of Angela Merkel dressed in a Nazi uniform? No, the Greeks were not being racist.
Yeah, you said it was xenophobia.
Yes.
Well, how can that be? They're depicting someone as being one of the most racist people, groups of people on the planet ever.
Because they're depicting someone as being racist, it doesn't make them racist.
It must do.
Well, why? If I depict you as being a racist, that doesn't make me racist.
Yeah, but if you're picking on me because of my race...
But I'm not.
You don't know?
And that's kind of how the show works. You call me to talk about older drivers, and we end up talking about the Germans. Warning! I'm about to tell you a very upsetting story involving a baby vole and its blood-filled death. If you've got any children listening, then forward this podcast on for about 2 minutes 51 seconds, starting in 3, 2, 1. I had an horrific day.
Yeah.
I came home from work and my boys were jumping around all excited with big grins on their faces. I said, boys, what's going on? Daddy, we've got a new pet. Thinking, oh, hang on a second, what... No, we haven't. We've got a cat, we've got a rabbit, both of which are getting on my nerves a bit at the moment. We've got a vole.
A vole?
I've never seen a vole. I didn't know what a vole was. My wife went, there was a vole on the kitchen floor this morning. And so I went, and it was out in the garden, and it was a tiny baby vole. It's about that big.
Right.
About 2 inches. And it was lying on its back in obvious agony, just moving its arms, and its little mouth was going, "Please, someone have the sense to help me." And my cat had brought it in, and I was quite pleased to think that my cat, 14 years old, can still do it.
Yeah,
and she brought this vole in, and it obviously snapped its spinal cord. So my boys, to help it get better. They did what any person would do. They put it on a magnifying glass and put leaves around it.
Humane.
Exactly. And my eldest is going, it's nearly died, it's nearly alive. That rhymes. And I was going, well, technically it's not a rhyme. We'll deal with that later. and they said, can we keep it?
Why wouldn't you want it?
And I had to say to my wife, sort of mouth my wife, we've got to get rid of this. She said, I'm not doing it. So I said, boys, why don't you go in and watch a Mr. Maker, CBeebies programme, excellent, and Daddy will make a coffee and we'll see what happens. Don't laugh, this is horrible. So they went into the living room, put Mr. Maker on. Actually, it was a giggle biz, which is very, very funny.
Details.
And I picked up the magnifying glass, I took it into the garage, I shut the door behind me, I tipped the vole onto the floor, and it's just like this. Go, please, somebody. There was a house brick in there. And I said,
you didn't use the magnifying glass.
No, I didn't. The magnifying glass was not part of this anymore. Now, that's out of the story. And I actually said, I'm so sorry for this.
Oh.
3 times. Three times I bashed a vole's head in with a brick. They have and I do apologise, young ears listening, they have a surprising amount of blood in them.
Well, I think it was the right thing to do, Ian. It was, you know... It was the mature thing to do.
Shouldn't have taken it to the vets or put a lolly stick on its back?
I don't think so. Or just put it in the bin. No.
That's made me feel a lot better, Paul. Thanks.
You did the right thing.
Paul Scoynes, our humane correspondent. Thank you, Paul. All right, kids, you can come back now. The story about me smashing a baby vole's head in with a brick has finished. Just in time to learn a little bit about Chaz and Dave. He dashed down here like a mad thing being fired out of a cannon.
I haven't quite got my breath back yet.
Do you want me to play a song or something?
A song?
Play a record.
Neil Sedaka.
Have you heard the new Chaz and Dave song?
I'm not a great lover of Chaz and Dave.
Snooker loopy nuts are we. Pop the red then, screw back for the yellow, green, brown, blue, plink and black. Snooker loopy nuts are we. We're all snooker loopy. I got sent the new one, Two Worlds Collide. I like a bit of Chaz and Dave. Have a listen to this. See what you think of this. You might... hang on a second. What? I know. My friend Paul Garner, I went to his house one day. He said, oh, the father-in-law's in the front room. Do you want to go and meet him? I said, no, not really. He said, no, I think you do. I said, I don't really. He said, no, come and meet the father-in-law. I walked in. It was Chaz from Chaz and Dave.
Really?
Yes. This is their new single. Have a listen. I think you'll like this. It's not bad, is it?
Very good.
It's catchy, isn't it? I'm thinking of making this my record of the week. think of introducing a Record of the Week feature just so we can play this every single day?
Excellent. We both
free? Do you want to take this CD and you can play it on your show?
No, thank you.
No. Drop the Michael Bublé.
Yes.
Sneak this in.
No, thank you.
No, listen. Here we go. What happens when two worlds collide?
Yeah. Okay, that's lovely.
Well, listen, let me give you this, because you can take this. Drop Michael Bublé today.
No, honestly.
Drop Candy by Robbie Williams. No one wants to hear that. Take that.
No,
honestly. Go on, take it. Take it.
Really?
Yeah, go on, enjoy it.
Oh, good.
Be a lot of fun. That's what happens when two worlds collide.
That's what happens when two Cockneys decide to go into musical partnership together. That's what happens.
They make classic tunes. Oh, kids, listen away again for 3 minutes 27 seconds. Going to talk about the dead vole, and this time I'm also going to include a dead kitten. 3, 2, 1. Leslie, did I do the right thing?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. Thank you. What happened to you? Have you had to do this?
Oh, well, no.
Oh.
I was driving in Stevenage and drove past this bird sitting upright in the gutter.
Yes.
And I thought, what's wrong with that? Why has that moved? I turned round and went back. And when I got out and I went over to it, still never moved, looking very dazed and stunned. And then when I picked it up, well, it had obviously been hit, but it was still alive. There were internal organs, were now external organs.
Oh. Hope you're enjoying your breakfast at home, guys.
Yeah, I know. And I went out, I'm afraid. I flagged down the first white van that came along. And with much apologising to the gentleman inside, I just said, I can't do this. I can't kill that bird.
Yeah.
And I can't leave it like that either.
And what did the fella in the white van say?
Not very much, actually. He just gave me one of those looks that this typical female, call a man to do it.
Yeah.
And he just went over and he took it into the bushes and did the business.
What? Listen, we've got young ears listening. We've got young ears listening. But what? He picked it up.
He wrung its neck.
He did it with his bare hands.
Yeah.
At least I used a weapon and tissue paper. I couldn't touch it.
Well, there weren't any bricks around. It was sort of, unless he started ripping branches off of the trees.
Oh, dear.
You know, or started ripping
that poor fella, he's driving to work, minding his own business. Suddenly some lunatic woman, could you go and kill a bird for me, please? I tell you, Leslie, I've got previous.
Have you?
I have. Again, listen, if you've got young ears, I really suggest you switch off until 8 o'clock, because I think this is going to get quite grim. So this is genuine.
Oh, dear.
I was on holiday in Spain, the worst holiday I've ever had. I had something wrong with me, and the doctors gave me the wrong tablets, OK? So I spent the entire week inside with just bright red, just this weird colour, because I had the wrong tablets. The one day I went out, we went out for tapas. We got ripped off. They charged us like €70 or something for tapas. So miserable.
Yeah. Right?
On the way back, walking this kind of country road, saw a kitten get run over by a car. Right, and this is horrible. I'm really sorry. Its back was flat. Okay, its back and road became one. Okay.
Yeah.
The cat's still alive, Leslie.
Oh.
And I'm there with my friends, and they said, well, what are we going to do? I said, well, we can't leave it there. Well, I'm not touching it.
No.
And I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, children. I picked up a brick. I clubbed that cat to death with a brick. It was horrible, Leslie.
It was going to die. You just saved it. Agony.
It was in agony, and even now I feel so... And again, I did the same thing I did with the vole. I went, I'm very, very sorry. It wouldn't have understood me. It was a Spanish cat, but I did say, I'm very, very sorry.
No, you did the right thing.
Oh, Leslie, it's a cruel world we live in, isn't it? I feel we've helped each other through this painful period.
I think we have.
Thank you so much, Leslie. It's nice to talk to you.
You take care.
Kids, you can come back. I finished the story about smashing in a kitten's head with a brick in Spain. And now you can hear me talking about street cleaners in Luton. 18 were told they may lose their jobs this week. Their fate was decided in council meetings. 18 were told they may lose their jobs this week. Their fate was decided in a council meeting that they weren't allowed to go to. In fact, the way the 18 workers would have found out was by listening to My Breakfast Show. Well, I spoke to Labour councillor Dave Taylor about this. He's in charge of the environment at Luton Borough Council and is very keen on saving money.
What I don't understand, Dave, is that if I've got this right, street cleaners, they're the second lowest paid workers on the council's books. So it's not going to save that much in comparison to other departments, is it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it saves £369,000 a year by cutting those jobs. We didn't want to do it, and I felt bad about doing it. And I talked to the street cleaners outside before the meeting and talked to them, you know, at the meeting afterwards. And it was a very difficult decision, and I never thought I'd see the day come to this town.
So this decision has been made because you have to save money. The council has to save money.
Because we're in an impossible position that the government have put us in by saving many, I think it's something like £47 million that we've got to save. And I don't think we've seen the worst of it yet.
OK, so you're doing this to save money. Can I ask, last night you made 16 people redundant in an attempt to save money, and then you and your officers go off to a nice dinner at the Luton Hoo Hotel to coincide with the opening of the busway at £1,000 a table.
Yeah, that was sponsored by the conference attendees, by the businesses, because there was a conference going on at the Thistle Hotel.
So did the council pay?
No, we didn't. There was no cost whatsoever to the council. If it had been a cost to the council, we would not have gone.
Look, still looks.
Honest with the street cleaners. I told the street cleaners,
Dave,
where we're going.
It still looks pretty rubbish. 16 people are going to lose their jobs, although they've only just had that confirmed by you being on the radio. Then you're swan off to a swanky dinner at the Luton Hoo at £1,000 a table. It's kind of rubbing their noses in it, isn't it?
Yeah, there was no cost to that to the council.
But still, it doesn't matter if there was a cost or not. It looks very arrogant, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I explained
to the
street cleaners where we were going.
But you went.
And we went, because it culminates in the busway today,
Dave,
which I'm on my way to now.
If I just sacked 16 people, I would feel very, very uncomfortable sitting at a table that was costing £1,000 with a champagne reception. I'd feel very uncomfortable. Yeah. I possibly wouldn't have gone on the same day I'd sacked 16 people.
Yeah. We were not celebrating sacking of the street cleaners.
No,
we're celebrating the opening of the busway.
And I'm not suggesting that you were celebrating that, but can you see how people who are about to lose their jobs...
Yeah.
Would see that as kind of, I don't know, an arrogance that you could go and sit at a table that cost £1,000 a table, a champagne reception.
Yeah, absolutely. I was honest with the street cleaners outside I told them where myself and Sean were going.
But that doesn't make it any better. That doesn't make it any easier to swallow.
It doesn't make it any better. We were guests of the conference to celebrate the opening of the busway.
Did you ever consider not going?
I did consider not going. I did inquire. Is there any cost to the council? There was not any cost to the council.
But the cost to your dignity?
Well, not necessarily my dignity. You know, I was open and honest about it.
Well, doesn't... So you just to finalise, because we're running a little bit late, you think it's totally appropriate to go to a champagne reception where it costs £1,000 a table on the day that you've sacked 16 people?
Just to celebrate the opening of the busway, which has been going on for 16 years.
You think that's appropriate?
Well... I mean, it's if you think that's inappropriate, fair enough.
So you're to celebrate the fact that something has gone over time and over budget, you've gone to a swanky champagne reception at £1,000 a table on the day you sacked 16 people, and that's acceptable.
And I'm just on my way to the opening now.
Okay.
And I'll probably see you down there if you're down there.
Dave, thank you very much indeed. It's a different world, isn't it? 16 people are going to lose their jobs. Got it down from 18. Well done, guys. So on the same, not even the same day, the same evening that 16 people are going to lose their jobs, they didn't know they were going to lose their jobs, they had to find out this morning, you go off to a champagne reception, sitting at a table that costs £1,000 a table. Yes, the council haven't paid for it, that's fantastic, but still, it's just the image that presents. That was Dave Taylor, not Dave off of Chaz, but Dave off of the environment at Luton Borough Council. But speaking of Chaz, Dave, I really wanted to speak to Chaz this week. You might hear him in the podcast. Failure on the part of my team. We're trying to get Chaz from Chaz and Dave on. What the hell? And yes, I am cursing because I am furious. What the hell is going on, Kelly Betts? Where is Chaz?
So Chaz, as in Chaz and Dave.
Yes.
I've left a message on his mobile phone, and I found his house number.
Right.
And I've called that as well, and that's rang and then went to answer phone.
Right. So what I'll ask the question again. Where is Chaz?
Chaz, if you're listening, can you give us a call? We want to talk to you about that awful, that really good new single that
Don't do it like that. He's not going to come on if you're being rude about him.
No, that was just a mistake.
OK, thank you, Kelly Betts. You failed. You've got 30 minutes to undo your failing.
Yeah, we'll get him.
OK. We will get him. She's promised, you see. She's promised, so therefore we will get him. 08459 455 555 is the telephone number if your name is Chaz. Even if you're not the Chaz from Chaz and Dave, we'll talk to you, OK? Not saying we're desperate, but if your name is Chaz or Charles or Charlie or Chuck, because that's what Chaz is short for, we'll talk to you. So, did she manage it?
No.
Stay listening! Kenya's foreign minister has claimed that a British woman was involved in the Nairobi terror attack. The Foreign Office says it's investigating whether she is Samantha Luthwaite from Buckinghamshire. Well, Samantha was married to Jermaine Lindsay, who killed 26 people when he blew himself up on a tube train in London in the 7/7 attacks. Well, I'm joined now by Raj Khan, who has known Samantha since she was a little girl. Morning, Raj. How did you know Samantha?
Good morning to you. Yeah, I mean, Samantha, we knew her from family. I mean, her family and our family used to socialise and get together and all this. We used to mix regularly through family when she was a little kid. And I found her a very innocent young girl when she was. She was a very lacking confidence, shy, and always would help others. And she was your average, normal Elsbury young girl.
When was the last time you saw her, Raj?
I saw her before the 7/7 happened. In fact, they came to see me in my professional capacity as a county councillor to help them with the housing issue. But that was obviously a very brief and a professional call upon me. And that's when I met Jermaine too. But meeting Jermaine was very brief. But Samantha, I knew for a while. And she hadn't changed. She was the same person. She was a follower, not a leader.
And when you say before 7/7, how close to that attack was it?
Probably about a month before.
Right. And you, as far as you were concerned, she was, you know, apart from growing up, she was the same girl that you'd known as when she was a youngster.
She was the same person. She was shy, she was helpful, she was sweet. You know, a normal young, you know, 16, 17-year-old girl would be at that age. And so helpful. And I am absolutely so amazed. I'm so worried. I'm horrified by what I see on an international level. I can't imagine that the young girl that I knew is now probably involved with such a sophisticated international terrorist organisation.
Well, she's on the front page of a lot of the newspapers. I mean, I was looking at the Mail here. Did White Widow, as a nickname, die in the siege? I mean, what do you think when you hear the speculation that she may possibly have been involved in this attack?
Well, I mean, I would say that until there's hard proof to suggest it is her, I would hold myself back because I think it's unfair. It's trial by media. I think we have to wait. If she is involved, then certainly it is very worrying, very frightening how a young British girl could be involved with such atrocities. And we condemn what, if she's done everything what they're supposed to have done. And my biggest worry is that my good faith of my religion has been associated once again with terrorism. A Muslim is not a terrorist, and a terrorist is not a Muslim.
How does someone, seemingly so, in inverted commas, normal, become corrupted and become involved in terrorist activities or you know, unnecessary violence against other people?
Well, I'm no expert on terrorism, but I can say one thing. The only thing I could think of, and knowing Samantha that I knew, that she could be under duress, she was always a follower. She was never a leader. And I just can't see for the life of me that she would have gone out and done everything that she's supposed to have done. She has been a follower, and she lacked confidence. And it worries me, it frightens me, that she could be what this is saying. But I'm holding an open mind at the moment until they can prove otherwise.
That's your latest news and sports. I'll be back with more at 7 o'clock.
Catherine, listen.
Yes.
Atmos. Can you hear that? Hello?
Yes. She stopped.
Yeah, but that was Atmos. That proves I'm actually at Luton train station. Listen, you've had children, haven't you?
Yeah.
And you had them the proper way, the way God intended, didn't you?
Well, I don't know. It ain't natural, is it?
You did what my son says when he's trying to have a poo. He heaved and he hoved. I'm heaving and I'm hoving, Dadda, and it's not coming out.
Yes.
Was your husband there, and did he see
yes.
everything? He saw everything.
He did, even though I'd said to him to stay away from the business end.
Yeah.
But they kind of forced him to look.
Why would they force a man to look?
Well, I suppose, you know, this is what you've done. Anyway, he was actually quite shaken by the whole thing.
It's
a
horrific.
Magical thing, but he said he went home and he did have a little sob to himself just because it was so shocking.
All right, listen, I was there for both my boys. I didn't see the first one coming out. I saw the second one coming out. And actually, thinking back, part of me wishes I hadn't seen them coming out because it kind of changes. Yes, it's magical and it's a miracle and it's all of that stuff, but it kind of changes, I think, the way you look at your wife a little bit. So maybe Simon Cowell's got this right, that yes, he wants, you know, being at the birth is a good thing, but actually seeing everything happen, I'm trying to handle this so delicately, but I feel naughty when I'm stood outside. Seeing everything happen is a bad idea. Do me a favour.
Fortunately, I didn't have to look, you see, so I can't say. I think this is a job for the fellas.
Could you do me a favour, Catherine?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could you get pregnant again?
No.
Thanks, Kath.
Earlier this week, we spoke about Vulgate. This is an exclusive only for the podcast. It was too graphic to broadcast on the radio. We can put it up on the internet because, as you know, you can see pictures of literally anything. Ugh! The story involves our political reporter, Paul Scoynes, and a kangaroo. Paul, I'm handing over to you, although you're recording your lines on a separate day.
This happened in about 2004. I was on a backpacking holiday across Australia, and we were on a bus from Ayers Rock, Uluru, as it should properly be called, to Adelaide, and we were sort of driving through the outback in a small sort of minibus, and with sort of various European tourists and an Australian guide who was rather akin to Mick Dundee, except a little more rotund. And we hit a kangaroo, as often happens. They bounce across the road, and it was a big kangaroo. The bus went straight into it. It wasn't dead, though. And the driver got out and could see that the animal was suffering. And I'll not give you the gory details about what he did, but he put it out of its misery and dragged the animal to the side of the road, where it would have been, you know, eaten by other prey and, you know, provided meals for other animals, as is the natural way. But it was fairly shocking. And you know, some of the people in the bus were a little bit upset, and we sort of drove on in silence for another sort of half an hour before anyone sort of started talking again. And it was it was one of those moments of nature where you sort of see things happening that you don't usually see in the city, I suppose. But it will always stay with me.
Thanks, Paul. That was great. This morning, we're talking about acts of kindness. Plenty of good people out there. We've already heard from our political reporter, Paul Scoynes, who got his e-reader back after leaving it on a bus. Well, he's not the only one who benefited from the kindness of strangers. We had an email yesterday, I think it was, from Flora McGregor. Good morning, Flora.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for getting in touch with us. What's your story? What happened?
Well, I was on the Berkhamsted train to Euston on the 9 o'clock train on Saturday morning, after being dropped off at the station by my friend. I got up to the platform, got on the train, and I suddenly realised I had left my handbag in my friend's car. By this time, it was on its way to Hemel Hempstead. And the lady who was sitting beside me, when I said, "Oh dear," she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Oh, I've left my handbag." "Oh," she said, "Well," I said, "I'll have to get out at the next station." And at that point, she got into her purse and handed me a £10 note. She said, "That will get you a taxi back to your friend's house." I was flabbergasted, and by the time I had recovered, the train was at Hemel Hempstead. I could not get her name or address or even town, but I assume she was in the Three Counties area, and hence my email to you yesterday so that I could thank her.
So hang on a second. What? So you didn't ask for any money or anything? You just told her what had happened?
She just gave me this £10 note, and I got off the train because it all happened within the time the train takes from Berkhamsted to Hemel Hempstead, which is about 3 minutes, and this happened. And I was just staggered.
Well, I was going to say, that's so unusual. When she made that offer, what did you think? What were you feeling?
Well, I just felt so much gratitude. And at the same time, I felt a bit embarrassed.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to take the money. But she said, please, this is the, you know, she insisted. And by that time, the train was in Hemel Hempstead and I was out of it.
And she didn't give you an address or nothing like that? She was just giving you that £10?
She just gave me that £10.
Right, Flora, I want to find this woman. What can you remember about her? Can you describe her?
She would be about medium height. I think she had a ponytail. Her hair was mid-brown, I think. But that's about all. I think she was wearing jeans and a top. And obviously she was travelling into London.
And remind us what train this was and what
it
time?
It was the 0900 hours from Berkhamsted to Euston. Well, and I don't know where it even came from. I presume it came from Milton Keynes.
OK, well, let's put this out there. If this rings a bell, if this is you, I was going to say if a friend of yours has told you they did this, but I would imagine this person would probably have kept quite quiet about it and wouldn't have gone off bragging that they'd done something like that.
Oh, I just thought it was wonderful.
I think it is.
And I just restored my faith in human nature.
When we got your email, we all kind of looked at it and were cooing and ahhing as we went, hey, this is great! Well, Flora, listen, it's really nice to talk to you. I'm hoping that we may get to talk to you again at some point if we manage to track down this person.
That would be lovely, and I would like to say thank you to her publicly on your programme. It was such a wonderful gesture, and I appreciated it very much.
Flora, it's lovely to talk to you, and thank you so much for getting in touch with us. You see, if something happens to you, I keep saying this, if you've got a story, big or small, good or bad, do send us an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. It's a long shot. Can we find that woman who gave a tenner? She gave, I hope you're listening, Paul Scoynes, that woman gave £10 to help poor Flora, who was stranded.
Good.
Without even any consideration for herself. If that story rings a bell, 08459 455 555. Well, Paul Scoynes is joining me because you are the other half of this conundrum.
Mm.
Very briefly, your e-book, your Kindle,
yeah.
Left it on a bus?
Left it on a bus.
You went round making everyone's life a misery here at work?
Yes.
Then what happened just earlier this week?
I got a phone call from the bus company and it's been handed back in. It's at the Lost Property Depot.
Okay, so as a reward, you've bought a box of chocolates.
And a card to say thank you.
Small box of chocolates. They could be allergic to chocolate.
Well, that is something I did wonder. I was wondering, do I get ones with, some nice, like a boozy chocolate? I like a boozy chocolate. And I thought maybe they don't drink.
I think that's part of the problem. This is where it's on. We spoke to Helen earlier on.
Yes, I heard.
This is what Helen had to say.
I think you should put Bobby a tenner in the card because she might be allergic to the chocolate. Buy a bouquet of flowers or something to go with the money.
A bouquet of flowers might be good.
Or a bouquet.
I think you're right. But you're agreeing with me that Paul Scoynes is a bit tight.
Yeah, I think he should give some more of that, because he's been giving everybody grief, hasn't he, because he lost it. He's had GBA for the year every day. So why not, give a little bit extra to that lady, because she went out of her way and found it.
Paul, is your heart melting yet?
Yes,
So this is a rare moment of broadcasting history. I'm bringing Paul Scoynes and Justin Dealey together.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Justin.
Oh, how miserable is Paul? I've got the facts here. Now, this Kindle on the case, £200, OK? The box of chocolates, we have priced this up, £2.60. I mean, that is ridiculous.
I think it was £2.69.
Absolutely outrageous. So, Ian, I have taken this to the streets this morning.
Yes.
I've been asking people if Paul Scoynes, our political reporter, is an absolute disgrace. And here's what people have had to say.
No, I think that's OK. It's a gesture. A lot of people nowadays probably wouldn't even bother to do that. Yeah, it's good.
You say good lad.
Absolutely. Well on him. Good on him.
I think someone like him should at least give a £10 tip or, something upon them regions. But it just goes to show, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for a box of chocolates worth £2, he might as well not bother.
Yeah, yeah.
So what would you give? What do you think is a fair price?
I'd probably go for, like, £20 or something, personally.
Yeah.
If somebody gave me it back and I got it all back, yeah, 20 quid.
And he's a political reporter. He mixes it up as well with the big cheeses, a bit like Nadine Dorries. And there he is giving £2. The bloke's an embarrassment, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, yeah. I suppose it is, yeah. But then some people would give nothing, so they'd sort of take it and run.
Do you think he should be fired for his attitude? Well, he's an embarrassment to the BBC.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think he should go?
Yeah.
Paul Scoynes. Utterly outrageous, don't you think? Just say yes.
Yes.
Yes. What would you give?
For a Kindle? I don't know. A bit more than a box of chocolates.
So you'd be grateful and you'd reward that person for finding that Kindle with some hard cash?
Definitely. Definitely.
I'll pass on the feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.
So you're a big fan of Paul Scoynes, aren't you?
Of who?
Paul Scoynes.
I don't understand, sorry.
Paul Scoynes.
Paul Scoynes.
Yeah, political reporter.
I've never heard of him.
No, he's a big deal. He's a big deal. Now, what Paul did, he left his Kindle on a bus. That Kindle has been returned. It's worth £200 with the case. He'll be going along later on to reward the driver who found it with a stingy £2 box of chocolates. What do you think? Is that outrageous?
No, I think that's just showing respect. No, I think that's fair enough, as long as the gesture is made.
Well, there we go. And nice to hear your serious voice in action, Justin.
Absolutely.
That's the same
views.
Voice you use when someone has their house burnt down.
Yes, it is, actually. Funny you should say that. Yeah, you're correct. Well done.
But the majority of people basically saying that the political reporter Paul Scoynes, no good.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to think about it. You've got to weigh everything up, OK? If he's prepared to go and spend £200 on those Czech shirts of his, you know, and then he's going to be offering a £2 box of chocolates, that, to me, just doesn't sit right. But that's just my personal opinion.
Paul, you've got 10 seconds. Your feedback to Justin, your reaction.
Utterly speechless.
Bit like most of our listeners.
I'm not a disgrace.
Thank you, Justin. Paul, I suggest you go and have a good hard think in the toilets. Off you go. Lock the door.
Across beds, hearts and bugs.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
Good morning. With the 8:30 headlines, I'm Catherine Boyle, the Chief Inspector of Hertfordshire Police, Jeremy. And it's emerged that BBC Three Counties Radio's political reporter Paul Scoynes, who's currently caught up in a row over whether to offer a financial reward to the Good Samaritan who returned his lost reading device, has yet to return £10 for a bus fare begged from a colleague on Monday.
Three Counties Sports.
Now, I know what you're all thinking. Did we get Chazen on the show this week? I'll tell you after we hear JVS whistling.
We can go back in history as to what the scheme might have been, and of course I understand there was a case.
That's not it. We'll cut that bit. Right. You can hear it after you hear Jonathan Vernon Smith having a cheeky whistle.
We can go back in history as to what the scheme might
have been. We'll cut that bit. You can hear it. Beep. I'll tell you after we hear JVS whistling.
We can go back in history as to what the scheme might
Hang on a second. Right, sorry. Cut this bit out, Kelly. I know what you're all thinking. Did we get Chazen on the show this week? I'll tell you after we hear JVS whistling.
We can go back in history as to what the scheme.
There's two of them.
Of course, I understand there was a case. Furrier Station and the railway. Obviously, my heart is a good idea, but the scheme might have been. Of course, I understand there was a case. Furrier Station and the railway. But that wasn't the choice we were faced with when I came. Obviously, my heart says that's a good idea, but
railway would have been more attractive, wouldn't it?
We can go back in history.
No. Turns out we haven't got that audio. So, did we get Chaz on the show this week? Let's see.
That's what happens when two worlds collide.
We love this single, don't we?
I love it. And genuinely, our tongues are not in our cheek. I think Chaz and Dave are fantastic songwriters. Because they're kind of that kind of Cockney rock and roll thing, they don't get taken seriously.
No, this is the new single, When Two Worlds Collide. It's released on the 28th of October. Some great quotes here. Jules Holland says, Chaz and Dave are amazing musicians. They could play the pants off a lot of people. And The Guardian, clever quote here, Chaz and Dave, there ain't no more pleasing sounds.
If you got locked in a boozer, right, and there was
a piano and a guitar, and there was Chris Martin from Coldplay, yeah. or there was Chaz and Dave. I know which ones would get the pub up and down and singing and dancing.
Yeah, do you know what? Chaz and Dave, they're absolutely fantastic. I have actually been in a boozer with Chaz and Dave
good
before.
For you.
Yeah, they were great.
Now, listen, you've been asking people, you've been taking this record out, playing it on your Ghetto Blaster today. What's been the opinion?
Well, the opinion has been interesting. Yes, I've been selling Chaz and Dave to the people of Bedfordshire this morning. I took this single out onto the streets, and Ian, here's what happened.
That's what happens when two worlds collide.
Hey, Luke, what do you reckon? It's great, isn't it?
It's all right.
All right?
I'm not into Chaz and Dave.
Can you score out of 10 for me?
Four.
Four?
Four.
No, wash your mouth out now.
I thought they'd split up.
Oh, yeah. You're refusing to listen to Chaz and Dave. What's going on? Why?
Because it's music my grandparents would listen to.
You don't like Chaz and Dave?
No.
They're legends.
I know they are, but no.
Come and listen to my Ghetto Blaster. Come on.
No.
Last chance.
No. Thank you.
Here, Ryan, you got a Spurs tattoo on your leg. You must be a massive Chaz and Dave fan.
Oh, yeah, huge fan, mate. Yeah, huge fan, yeah.
This is the new single. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not too bad. For Rabbit, though.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a long time ago, though.
Yeah, it was a little while ago, but the oldies are the best, didn't they?
Yeah, they're taking it forward. So this single you're hearing now, would you go out and buy that? Is that a yes?
Yeah, I'll go and buy it, mate. Yeah, buy the album, the lot. That's what
happens. Morning, sir. What's your name?
Glenn.
It's a new Chaz and Dave single. What do you think?
Yeah, it might grow on me, but yeah. I don't think it will.
It's a grower.
It might be. It might be.
First time I heard it, I loved this record. Absolutely fantastic.
It could grow on me. I'm not a big music fan, but yeah. It could grow on me. We'll see.
Wendy, I've got my Ghetto Blaster here today. I'm feeling it. It's the new Chaz and Dave single. Come on, how great is this?
It's different, but it's good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do like it, actually.
Can you give it a score out of 10 for us?
Oh, 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10?
Yeah.
That's the best score so far.
Yeah,
best.
I like that.
What happens for Wendy?
Can I?
Okay. We're two worlds collide.
It's catchy, isn't it?
It is.
So you're going to go and buy it?
Yes, definitely.
Good for you, Wendy.
Fantastic, we got there, Justin. She loved it, and she's right too. Justin, stay on the line.
Yeah, I will do.
Please do. We've got a couple of guests. Now, we're joined now. I'm not convinced. Is that Chaz?
Chaz here, yeah. Hello?
Is that Chaz from Chaz and Dave?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Is that... Hang on a minute. I've spoken to Chaz. I've met
That's
Chaz.
Not Chaz.
That's not Chaz. You sound like you're about 40.
I'm Chaz. This is Chaz Hodges. From Chaz and Dave.
It's not Chaz Hodges.
Chaz,
who has she got?
Chaz, give us a little sing song to prove it's you. Go on.
Mother phoned up last night. She was going spare. She was in a temper, pulling out her ear. Sister's caught in a scruffy little tent. Father, don't give a monkey's. This is what you see.
Well, I tell you what, that wasn't bad. There is one woman who would know whether this is Chaz or not. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Mrs. Chaz. It's Joan Hodges. Morning, Joan.
Good morning, Ian. How are you?
I'm fine. Is it nice to hear your husband on the other line?
It's definitely not my husband.
Is it? Who are you, sir, you imposter?
I'm Keith from Daz and Chave, the tribute Chaz and Dave.
There's a tribute, there's a Daz and Chave, Chaz and Dave tribute act.
That's it. How are you, Joan?
Yes, very, very well. You sound good. More like Mike Berry, actually.
Joan, have
we last met at the Dominion Theatre, Tottenham Court Road.
I do remember that, in the foyer.
Joan, is that not weird that your husband has got a tribute act to him?
Not really, because I think there's a load out there,
yeah,
isn't there?
There's a few.
Yeah.
Fake Chaz, when you play, what kind of audience is he getting, and what sort of age are they?
All ages, really. Weddings and birthday parties all over England. Very good audiences. Mixed age.
And it's a popular... Listen, Fake Chaz, we should let you go, but thank you so much for being a good sport. That's from Daz and Chave. Joan Hodges, lovely to speak to you, my dear. How are you doing?
Very, very well, Ian.
Where on earth is your old man?
He is sound asleep because he didn't get in from... Well, he worked late, right through till 4 o'clock this morning.
Where's he been working?
Well, he was writing last night.
Oh, what's he writing? Not another gardening book?
No, music.
Fantastic.
He writes up until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Does he really? Because Chaz and Dave, they've had mixed fortunes, and I do think they're overlooked, and I genuinely mean it. I think that some of their songs are as good as Ray Davies of the Kinks.
Oh, absolutely.
In summing up British life.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And this new album, I was lucky enough to be in Abbey Road when they were recording it, and the absolute vibe there was magical. When Jules came in, it was absolutely brilliant.
There's a lot of affection for them. They're doing a huge tour, aren't they?
Massive tour. And also we find it's people that really, really know music, love Chaz and Dave.
Yeah.
All the others are cloth ears as far as I'm concerned.
I think you're absolutely right. I think
and I do. I'm not just saying that. I think their music is real. They've never tried to prove anything other than just write good music and let people enjoy themselves. And that is so evident at the gigs. Because you never get a miserable person going out from the Chaz and Dave gig.
The answer to if we got Chaz on the show was no, we didn't. But thanks for listening all the way to the end of the podcast, suckers. If you want to send me an email and congratulate me on winding you up successfully for 50-odd minutes, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. You can listen to the show live on BBC Three Counties Radio every weekday between 6 and 9, or you can go and listen again. Thanks, guys. It's been really nice sharing this time with you.
We can go back in history as to what the scheme might have been, and of course I understand there was a case for reinstating the railway.
Shut up.
Thanks for listening to this free download from BBC Three Counties Radio, your local radio station for Beds, Hearts and Bucks, on FM, AM, digital radio and online at bbc.co.uk/threecounties.